I'm Drew.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Kyle. We host the Movie Wars podcast. We pit the most legendary films of all time against one another using our theoretical scorecard, which consists of some classic categories like Best Cast, as well as off-the-wall categories like Which Gang Would You Rather Be In from our Goodfellas vs. The Godfather episode, or Who Would You Rather Be Eaten by the Shark or the T-Rex from our Jurassic Park vs. Jaws episode. And our matchups aren't always obvious. We go out of our way to find connective tissues between the films we choose. You won't want to miss Randos, which is the result of us doing hours of research and preparation for each show. You're guaranteed to hear facts that you won't even find in the deepest corners of the internet. Check out episodes like There Will Be Blood versus No Country for Old Men and Total Recall versus Minority Report. If you want to hear a hilarious and informative approach to stacking the greatest films of all time against one another, check out Movie Wars.
What's up, shipheads? It's draft day. We are back, and we had so much fun on our 1990 year draft in film that we had to come back for the next year. We're running it back. I got my man Dez with me here today, and we're going to be doing the year 1991 of film releases. What's up, buddy?
Oh, you know, just same old, same old. Just living the dream and reliving the 1990s and just really digging deep and trying to find what was best of this amazing decade that gave us all kinds of classics.
This is one I was definitely looking forward to because 1990, I'll be honest, there's ones I remember, but there weren't really ones that I had a really strong relationship with. You had a few classics in there, right. But it still felt like a little bit before my era in a lot of ways. But now you start looking at it, there's ones I grew up watching, really have a lot of investment with. Rewatchability numbers start to go up and up with these. So it's definitely going to be a fun one that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. 1991, a while back now, you know, it seems like, you know, if you think back upon some things, maybe it didn't seem like it was that far away. It's a while back now. So you have to really dig back into the memory bank to figure out what was going on to 7-year-old Dez at the time. 1991. Looking back at these list of these movies that came out in 1991, you know, I really got to start to question some of my parents' decisions that they're making with 7-year-old Dez, because I saw a lot of these movies. You know, I remember seeing them fairly early when they came out, and I don't think a 7-year-old should be seeing some of these titles. Definitely don't think my 7-year-old would be watching some of these at that age.
Yeah, some of these I definitely watch pretty young, and they start to, you know, a lot of the ones from the 1990, they still felt like they were 80s films. You called that out on the last one, where it was kind of that transition year where they're still embodying a lot of the elements of the previous decade. But this is one where these start to feel really 90s for me. Really start to fit that mold. And like you said, ones as younger kids that we're watching pretty young. And I think that was just the way that the time back then. But hey, you know, we're pretty well cultured and had a nice refined film palette, even at a young age.
Yeah. I mean, 1991, I mean, just giving you a quick little glance at what was going on. I mean, you know, you're talking January of 91, the start of Desert Storm, the Gulf War, gas prices, you know, an amazing $1.12 in 1991. What a wild time. The Super Nintendo had just come out. So, you know, we were right in our prime, you know, with the Super Nintendo coming out in 1991. Some crazy stuff happened. Jeffrey Dahmer was arrested. The whole Jeffrey Dahmer situation was in 1991. Freddie Mercury announces that he has AIDS and dies the very next day. I mean, it's a wild time, that 1991.
Yeah. I mean, give me young Bull sitting there watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 and playing his Super Nintendo, you know, Donkey Kong, Super Mario World, all those. Bull's having a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have a lot of good choices here for 1991. I'm very happy that I get the first overall pick on this draft, on this one this time around. So Because, you know, there's a few good ones out there you want to snag up early.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to be swapping the draft order for each of these years. So you can really start to kind of get strategic on where you're leaning in heavy if you got that first overall pick. There's a few that I look at it. Look at the breakdown here. There's a few that I could potentially see going number one here. So I'm kind of interested to see what direction you take. I think I know, but still, I wouldn't be shocked if another one snuck in there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just to recap how it works here, Case, this is your first listening on a draft cast here. You know, we basically have a snake-style draft head-to-head. And, you know, we each take turns picking. So I go first. If I'm getting the first pick this round, which means you go second to close out the first round. And then you get to start the second round. So you essentially get two back-to-back picks most of the way through this whole draft here, minus the first pick and the last pick. So a lot of strategy involved with that. We have to fill certain categories in this draft here. We're looking at filling roster spots of comedy, drama, action, romance, sci-fi, horror, and family. So again, looking at when we make up these draft boards, we got to play the man and also the draft board here. You know, look at, you know, which categories might be a little deeper that year. Maybe there's a lot more comedy that came out that year, so you can, you know, hold off on taking one of those early. Who knows? There's a lot of strategy involved here in picking what movies in what order. There's no rules here, as long as it came out in 1991 and it fits that category. That's where it can go, and it's first come, first serve in these drafts, and it gets brutal sometimes.
Definitely so. Gets heated. I get, you know, most of the time I get you fired up when I start playing the man, start going after your personal favorites, but yeah, you gotta be defensive. You know, if you see your man, you gotta go out and get him, basically.
That's right.
So
you know, I guess we'll want to jump right into this thing here. First pick.
Yeah, Dez, you were on the clock. Number one overall. Who you got?
Well, for me, looking at the list of 1991 releases, again, going by categories, you kind of have to break it down. Which ones are a little more stacked? Which one can you sleep on a little bit later in the rounds? For me, as soon as I saw the list of movies that came out in 1991, the first one that popped out to me was one that's near and dear to my heart. You know, you and I both have a certain soft spot in our hearts for this franchise. And, you know, when you talk about this movie, it gets brought up a lot in the conversation of sequels, because most of the time sequels get themselves a bad name. You don't want to, you know, the sequel's almost always never as good as the first one. And there's a few certain cases here and there. And I think this one might be my personal favorite for that argument of sequels being better than the first. And just, top of that list, I'm going to go with one that I have a personal love for. I'm going to go with the T2 Terminator 2 Judgment Day. You know, could be very well the best Terminator in the entire Terminator franchise. If you're looking at it in terms of overall storyline and just the way, you know, everything kind of took shape after that.
That's a fair, you know, statement.
Original Terminator, you know, you had Arnold. He's the bad guy. He's the bad Terminator. Comes back. It's a whole new world. They created this whole new, you know, take on things. And, you know, you wouldn't think that would, you know, go over well with fans, you know, completely turning this on their head after they're already used to Arnold Schwarzenegger being the bad guy. And now here he comes, lovable Arnold being the good guy, the helper here. You got this cool technology that's out there with the new liquid Terminator. You know, have you seen this boy? Iconic moments that get parodied for forever. I think this is definitely, for me, it's a homer pick for me. And I think it could definitely be on the top list of most people if they're drafting best of 1991.
Yeah, I kind of expect that's what you're going to take with that pick. I think it's the safest pick across the board. You have Arnold at really the height of his powers with that movie. You have, from a technological standpoint, Cameron, who you go back, and that's really the first time where we're kind of moving past the things they're testing out in the 80s, and it feels like legit effects, right? You go back, and that movie still holds up from an effect standpoint. You look at like that in Jurassic Park, where like, how do they accomplish that at the time? But also, it still looks incredible. And, it, you know, right, so you're right at that peak where you're starting to get this really great technology. People are using it in the right ways. And really, until the rest of the decade, we're really leaning into that before we get into that weird, you know, 98 to 2000 6 weird CGI phase where they overdo it, but like this is the start of that great run. And so from all those aspects, one of the best sequels. You're kind of switching it up from a horror specific genre, which the first Terminator embodies a lot of, to more of that action packed one where Cameron's done that approach before and it just works so well. So many things you could call out on why that movie's great. And from a studio creating their lineup, that's going to grab some headlines. So very, very good number one overall pick. Didn't mess up yet.
Yeah. You know, I try not to.
That's all third round. Work out
that way for me.
Keep it interesting.
You know, I'm looking at the sci-fi options. I mean, it's not a super deep field for 1991 mm-hmm. too. So I'm going to, you know, like you said, maybe you could have put this into action. I could have put this into horror. I'm going to slide this into my sci-fi slot here. And lock up a good sci-fi pick.
It's a good call because sci-fi and horror could typically, you're going to get a lot of your more run-of-the-mill releases, maybe not top-tier ones for those categories. So if it's a year where you do see that, you're definitely going to want to jump on it. So I'm actually going to embody that strategy for my next two picks here. And this was the only other one I thought could potentially go in the mix there, but I'm going to lock down my horror here. Arguably one of the greatest villains of all time. I'm going to bring him in under Studio Bull. Talk about Mr. Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs in my horror slot. Rarely you're going to see a horror film have this much prestige tied to it. So if I can do that, lock down one of the best performances, one of the best characters. Movie still holds up really well upon rewatch today. But I view that as one of the only other ones out there that is going to get, you know, the eyes on it that would allow me to compete with Judgment Day, which is going to be a powerhouse to go up against.
Yeah, you know, and I definitely don't hate this pick as well. I definitely considered it as a first overall pick. You know, you're talking a top film of 1991, you know, different award mm-hmm. nominations and just like I said, it's just a performance of a lifetime for Anthony Hopkins, which is funny because, you know, it's a nearly 2 hour movie and Anthony Hopkins is on screen for less than 15 minutes.
Game you saw, he kicks some like, ass.
You know, it's just, you think about a performance like that. And, you know, we've had other podcasts where we discussed this performance and it's just a heater performance. You know, you come in there and you steal the show. I mean, 15 minutes, like that's an absurd amount of limited screen time in a 2 hour long movie when you're the, you know, the main villain of this entire thing. And that you can, I mean, when you think about watching that movie back, it feels like a lot more than that. It definitely does. It feels like there's more, and you know, and there's also that iconic line, you know, about, you know, the hello Clarice, everyone gets it incorrect. It's one of those, Mandela effects that people tend to remember it in a different way, but, solid choice there at number two. And as you know, we're both horror guys. So not a huge, again, not a hugely deep horror year in 1991, but definitely right
one
up there.
One of the very few prestige horror films out there. Can't really think of a long list that are going to be in the same category as Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, that kind of like has that kind of a horror quality, what, you know, kind of keeps it classy at the same time.
So I'm up again here and I start looking at the categories. There's some other big ones that jump out that I am tempted to jump on, but you talk about having a well-rounded studio and what's going to capture a lot of your audiences. You knew from 1990 that Studio Bull is always going to have a focus on the family-friendly films. That's our target audience. They love our studio. Yeah. We got to, you know, keep serving them the classics here. So,
anything, if we can find Macaulay Culkin somewhere in
if
the mix,
he had a release,
it's a bonus.
We're locking that down. So there's one film that jumps out that I feel like I have to take with this next pick. It's slide into family friendly. There's going to consistently be Disney releases coming up.
In the 90s. Oh, yeah. Heavy Disney.
And there's
years.
Only going to be a few that you're going to really jump on early that are just going to be instant classics. I got to go Beauty and the Beast here. I feel like it's one of those early ones where it really resonated with, you know, multiple age groups of people that enjoyed it. You get your classic songs and numbers with it. Really, really impactful, big Disney movie that came out. And in that top tier there, that I think you're only going to have a few of those, or everyone loves a Disney movie, right? But there's only a few that really are top tier ones that you're going to be leaning into super early when it comes to the whole landscape of releases for that year. So I think this is one that, you know, has the numbers behind it, has the fan favorite aspects to it, where I think it can definitely legitimate an early pick here.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking 1991, you know, you're talking a movie that's a tale as old as time here. I mean, you set it up so nicely.
Yeah, I'm kicking myself because I had to sort of, you know, be our guest and come watch our movie for the line.
I mean, it was just sitting up there nicely teed up. I just, but yeah, no, great pick there. Anytime you go Disney, you're gonna have a fan favorite in there. Beauty and the Beast. It really does hold up to the test of time. You know, it's one of those movies that, you know, they've just recently in the last, I don't know, was it maybe five years or so, done the live action, you know, Beauty and the Beast, you know, fairly solid adaptation. You know, you've got a pretty good banger right there. If you're putting Beauty and the Beast next to Silence of the Lambs, you got your audience is got a wide variety. Hey, now at this
we've
point,
cornered so. Both ends of the spectrum. No, I just got to fill the gap in the middle.
Exactly. So that that leads off round number two. So that means I get to close off round number two and with a back-to-back pick to start round number three. You know, I like where you're going with the family stuff. There's a lot of good choices this year for 1991. I thought for sure for your family pick, you were going to go a different direction. Just knowing the movies that you love and looking at the list, and I said, there's no way this movie does not go to Bull's team here. So I'm going to lock down, you know, one of my fan favorite movies here. Again, a classic. Surprise is not on your team. You're going to be a little sad when I call this one out. I'm going to go with a movie called Hook.
And, you know, this is where sometimes you got to sacrifice. Sometimes you got to go get your guy. It's got to happen. But also sometimes you have to sacrifice that to win the draft. And that's where I got to do that time. Is it going to hurt? Yes. But, you know, it tastes so much sweeter victory. So I'm a huge Hook guy. It's an interesting one because it wasn't really well received with critics and I think even older audiences. But it's one that I just watched over and over and over again as a kid. And such bizarre casting if you go back and look at it with Robin Williams being cast as Peter Pan. Like, it just seems like such an outlier, right? But it works so well in my eyes, at least.
I mean, he's got a good relationship with Disney now. Aladdin came out in 1990, the year before. So he's already got, you know, he's got the in with Disney. But, you know, I don't think, was Hook a Disney? I think we discussed this before. Peter Pan's not officially a Disney property, right? Like, it's one of those, like, weird open license things that Disney just has a hold of.
Aladdin was an ID, too. That's coming up. It's coming up next year.
Oh, okay. Oh, man. I thought a lot of
was like, wait, how do we not pick that last draft?
Right? Yeah. Well, maybe this is the start of things for Ron Williams then in Disney's eyes. So, but you know, you've got a fantastic performance there out of Robin Williams, Julie Roberts, Dustin Hoffman, which you wouldn't think would be the first choice to play Captain Hook, but does an excellent job.
Yeah. Spielberg at the helm. I mean, you got all the check boxes to name drop for your marketing, for sure. Like I said, yeah, critics aren't always right. I distinctly remember this having a reputation not being well received with critics, but it's a fun movie. I mean,
it was number six at the box office, you know, in the top 10 for the year. You know, it beat out a couple other you know movies, you know, that were. You thought would have been maybe a little bit higher on the list, but definitely, you know, it's top 10 film of the year.
And I owe a huge Rufio fan,
yeah.
But I will say Hoffman's performance as Hook is one of the most entertaining ones. As an adult watching it now, that's the part I get the most enjoyment from. Him and his banter with Smee is just, it's priceless.
You just want to hope that as an actor you ever get a chance to have a character of that level, of that magnitude. You could just go so off the walls with.
You better pick your next pick because I'm just going to go on a deep dive review of Hook right now.
Oh goodness! Well, I'm glad I was able to lock something down that we could both agree is a good solid early round.
T2 and Hook, and I'm so sorry you're trying to talk smack and I'm just stumbling over my words.
Yeah, it's tough. So that closes out the round two. I'm going to start round three here. Looking at the list of movies here, you know, oftentimes it's good to look at your tops. You know, your top 10 box office, your top 10 award nominees, your award getters. Things that, did really well, like that kind of thing. So, when I looked at those options and just, again, from a personal standpoint, you had a movie that was very well received at the box office. I've already locked down the number one box office movie of 1991. That was Terminator 2.
Of course.
So looking at that top 10 list, I want to try to get as many of the top 10 lists as I can get that works out for me. Look, what's right below Terminator 2? In that box office list, I'm going to go with something that just upon rewatching just really kind of hits you in all the feels as well. I'm going to go with Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves with my guy, Kevin Costner, locking down the big stars. That's it. You got the studio, Dez Studios, locking down Schwarzenegger, Rob Williams, Kevin Costner. We got all the big names over at our studio. Number two at the box office for 1991, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. It led to the the Robin Hood Men in Tights parody movies. It gets poked at here and there. Had a great soundtrack of Bryan Adams. If you did slow dance to Everything I Do It For You at least one of your school dances. I mean, were you really really living in the 90s?
Yeah, pretty fun supporting cast, right? Yeah, Freeman, got a great villain with Hans.
Yeah, Alan Rickman. Yeah. I mean, come on, the guy's had a career.
Is that one that people are rewatching now? I think if you're drafting in the year 1991, that's like a number two, three pick. But I don't know. I don't think it really has staying power. When's the last time you rewatched this?
I can't say I have a date, or a range in mind. I mean, it may have been the 90s that the last time I saw it. Yeah,
I
it might
have been. I think that's probably the last time I watched it. And I appreciate the angle going with the box office numbers, just pure revenue driven. But I think especially drafting in today's mindset, factoring in kind of both current and historical context on these, I get the box office numbers, but I think for today's time, it drops. It definitely drops down the list of the other contenders out there.
Yeah, but if you're doing a throwback cinema and all the movies have to be from 1991, and you look up at that marquee and you go, yeah, you know what, Terminator is great. I've seen it a bunch of times. Hook, obviously amazing. If I'm bringing the family, but if I'm going like a date night maybe, and I have to pick from these 1990s movies, I'm going to look at Prince of Thieves and I'm going to go, damn, I haven't seen that movie in a while. But that was really good. Maybe it deserves a rewatch. So I think it's probably going to get some, nostalgia. Rewatch, playability there.
If you're out on a date with Sally and you look at both of our theaters next to each other, you're taking her Prince of Thieves over Silence of the Lambs. That just screams date night. Come on.
I mean, I guess it depends on what Sally's mom lets you bring her to. If you can sneak into, Silence of the Lambs, you're probably going to do that, It's science. You don't want to go to a not scary movie with a date.
Yeah, probably not the best play there. I respect the angle though, but like I said, I think it's historically hasn't aged as well.
Maybe it's worth a rewatch here soon.
I'm gonna do it now that you threw it out there. I haven't watched in a while. We're gonna do it. But right. You talk about staying power and what's aged well. I mean, you're walking down throwback theaters, what's going to put fans in the stands? I'm locking down my action pick here. Point Break. Two, Utah. Two.
Oh.
What a cast. We got Busey. We got the Swayze. We got Keanu. What more could you want? This is like a fan cult favorite for what Point Break has turned into. And yeah, extend off into the Fast and Furious franchise now is kind of embodied in its own beast, but people still go back and love rewatching this movie. So I love having this. I thought I was going to go with your last one, But you taking Prince of Thieves, dropping Point Break to me, I'll take that all day.
I mean, I'm not going to say it wasn't on the short list, because it definitely was. I mean, anytime Keanu has a movie out, it's going to get some consideration from me for sure. And like I said, Point Break has a cult classic following. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure how popular it was, you know, given in 1991. I don't think it was, you know, it definitely wasn't like a box office blockbuster. It wasn't anything. It was like, you know, setting records or anything. But I think it was one of those movies that, you know, once you watched it, you know, later on, it kind of grew and grew and made itself a little bit bigger. Yeah, so
definitely aged well. Shout out Catherine Bigelow too, behind the camera there. He's had a great career.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Patrick Swayze. I mean, we can't go wrong with Patrick Swayze either. So.
So I got my action one. I feel like I'm gonna be pulling definitely a lot of action fans, right? Get them in the stands. Maybe pull a little bit from Judgment Day. It's going to be an uphill battle, I'll admit it. But, you know, maybe I go a little bit of, you know, different angle here, try to balance out my audience, try to, you know, pull up some of the female audiences with some of these picks here to balance that out. I'm going to go with my next one. I'm going to pull in drama here. Let's go with Thelma and Louise. I feel highly regarded film. It had, you know, some award recognition that year. Great, great casting, fun movie, and I think it's just a great one. You see that name pop up, you're going to want it as part of your roster. People are going to gravitate to it. It's kind of become a classic, right? When look at just iconic movies people think of, iconic scenes. So locking down Thelma and Louise here with my drama pick.
You know, I think you're going to definitely have a sizable chunk of the girls' night crowd going out, like, girls' night, let's go see Thelma and Louise.
Exactly. That or Silence of the Lambs. It's going to be one of those two.
Yeah. I thought for sure you were going to put Point Break maybe in your romance category. Ooh, yeah. Maybe put like a bromance, you know, but, the bromance subcategory of romance.
Find a way, find someone that looks at you the way that Swayze looks at Keanu in that movie.
Yeah. Or Thelma looks at Louise. It could probably, maybe you could make a play for that for romance too. Yeah. I mean, you know, still to this day, again, the ending of that movie was one of those ones that's talked about by fans and film critics, and it gets parodied and talked about here. The Wayne's World ending, you know, when they do the Thelma and Louise ending.
Parodied, it's a good sign.
Yeah. Iconic. Solid stuff. Yep. Well, you know, I'm a little bothered by the fact that you got some good solid, you know, mid-level stuff there early on. I gotta try to combat this. Come right back at you. I want to think I'm gonna fight fire with fire here. I think what I gotta do is I gotta take some bullets out of your gun and fire them back at you. Look at this list of 1991 here. I mean, what actor do you have such a deep soft spot in your heart for?
there's quite a few.
I think we know where this is going. Macaulay Culkin.
Do I love him or you hate him?
I think
what's the Venn diagram, you know, on that?
Could go either way. I think it's right in the middle there. I think the circles overlap quite a bit. But just to cover my bases, just you know. Well, I'm going to lock down my Macaulay Culkin option here, I think. I think we can look at, let's see, where can I put this? You know, this could go into Culkin. Maybe.
Oh, okay. That's
right. Oh, I haven't even, I should probably not make an announce the movie. It's my girl. It's obviously my girl. 1991, everyone watching this movie. You know, seeing Macaulay Culkin being such a little sweetheart.
You would pick the movie he dies
such
in.
Such a mischievous. I mean, that's the only way. It's the only way it's acceptable.
Can't see with those glasses. What? Heartbreaking.
What scene. Year did The Good Son come out?
You know what? I'll admit it. I'm a My Girl 2 fan as well. Don't sleep on My Girl 2.
Really? Oh, okay. I mean, again, great little cast there. Dan Aykroyd, you know, Macaulay Culkin.
Jamie Lee Curtis, right?
It's a good Jamie Lee Curtis, yeah. I mean, Solid choice there. My Girl, I'm going to slide that in my drama slot. I think head-to-head, My Girl would hold up against Thelma and Louise, I think. You know, you're talking...
You're in the younger audience, for sure. But if maybe, they had the option between
the tweens.
The Beast and My Girl, that's going to be... We're going punch for punch here. I love it.
Yeah. It's back and forth. It's a heavyweight fight here. So going to pull out all the stops. I'm going to, you know, looking at my romance category, where I could have slid Michael in there. You know, I'm going to be honest. Romance, definitely not my category. You know, not my first choice on the marquee. If I'm picking things out, you know, maybe if I'm it's a date night and it's, you know, my wife's turn to pick the movie, we'll see a romantic movie, but you know, not my first go-to. There's too many good things that with explosions for me to look. Right. Well, wait till what year did the Hallmark start making Christmas movies? Because then that year you're gonna have that category.
I would say Kissing Under the Mistletoe.
So, you know, I'm gonna go with the romance. I think for my next pick, because again, not a super deep category for me personally, and just in 1991, I'm gonna go with the one I think though that I can at least relate to. Okay, I'm gonna go with the movie Frankie and Johnny, which was. Al Pacino, Michelle Pfeiffer, maybe a little throwback to my Scarface days. You know, it's, you know, you had them, the two of them back together in Scarface. Now they're back together in Frankie and Johnny. Good little cast here in Frankie and Johnny. You know, it's a kind of one of those underrated romances. You know, you had Al Pacino and Michelle Pfeiffer. Nathan Lane is in this guy. You know, it's just one of those, you know, fly under the radar romances. I think that, it doesn't get talked about a lot, but it's got some name recognition in there.
See, now I know you're on tilt. If you saw me cornering the market on name, ampersand, name, titling convention, and now you're just trying to follow suit, go after my Thelma and Louise with Frankie and Johnny, it's just not going to stack up.
Yeah, you got to get the little and logo in there. Not very often at the movie theater marquee, you get to see the little and, you know, symbol there. So
if you can pull that out of the box, then... You got to do it.
That's right. I think,
you know,
yeah, the employees get excited.
Thelma and Louise versus Frankie and Johnny. You know who Thelma and Louise are instantly. I honestly don't have that much relationship with Frankie and Johnny.
You know, it's one of those underrated movies, I think. Fly under the radar.
No, you're going with the future. Young, waiting for it to catch on.
Yeah. Young, gorgeous Michelle Pfeiffer in her heyday. Al Pacino, you know. In his, you know, romantic days.
Did he have romantic days?
I don't know
days?
If he had romantic days. He might not have, you're right. I don't
every
know.
Every scene I can imagine him kissing a woman is just awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just followed up by, like, oh, you're a very good kisser. Hoo-ah! Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't embody sexy to me.
Women hear that voice and yeah, it's over. It's over.
Smoker's voice.
All right. So I guess that's on to you then to close out this next round and then start the next one for us. Your last two back-to-back picks before we get this thing just about wrapped up.
So you got me running my box office numbers here because I'm not just going to let you run away with this. So you got 1 and 2 in number 6. So I want to make sure we're a little bit competitive in that space because I feel like I got some good name recognition top to bottom here.
Yep.
So I got Beauty and the Beast, which was number 3. I think I'm eyeing 2 more here that show up on this top 10 list. So try to split the difference a little bit. I got my comedy slot that I'm going to be eyeing here, and there's two I'm torn between. Actually, both show up on the top 10. And one's a personal favorite for me, which I go back and consistently watch, but I don't know how much that's for the masses. So I think I'm gonna lock down the one here that's just more name recognition. And when you think back to 1991, it's a staple. You're watching TV, it's gonna be on all the time. We're talking about the Billy Crystal classic, Daniel Snyder classic, City Slickers, number 5 at the box office. And I think this is one of the most well-received, influential comedies of that decade. I mean, if you go back and think about it, like City Slickers was pretty big. Like a lot of people gravitated to it. A lot of people watched it. It's definitely a rewatchable film. So I feel pretty confident locking that down in my comedy slot because I feel like it's just a iconic classic 1990s film for that genre.
All right. Yeah. I mean, it's solid choice. You're, like I said, Daniel Stern coming off of Home Alone the year before just having a career there in the early 90s. I'm more of a City Slickers 2 Curly's Gold kind of guy, but, the original ones, it's got some staying power as well.
I mean, just the relationship with him and that calf. It's so touching.
I mean, just it makes all these city folks want to go out and just become a cowboy all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah, I feel like that was definitely a thing after where people wanted to go and do that.
Like New York City, probably this cowboy hat sales probably went through the roof after City Slickers came out.
And it's interesting. You look at Crystal, who I feel like is just such a staple and an icon in the comedy realm. And you got, Harry Met Sally, the Analyze This films, right? But I feel like he doesn't have as many like just top tier, like super recognizable, like big contenders. Right. So if I can lock up one of those, City Slickers is definitely in that for an iconic comedy star like that. I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah. Not going to hate on that. That's some good value late in this draft for sure.
And for my next one, I have romance and sci-fi left.
Oh, two real slim sci-fi picking categories.
I
can't believe you waited this long.
What else am I gonna do? There's like hardly anything after T2. The drop off is horrendous. So I'm telling you right now, I'm waiting on that.
Okay, all right.
But with romance, you got Frankie and Johnny, so I don't have anything else that's gonna be really contending with that. It's again, like I feel like it wasn't really the rom-com era yet. So you're not kind of as many that are really like a deep roster year to year. So I'm looking down at, regarding Henry could technically fall into that. You get your, Harry Ford coming in with a pretty well-received performance. But no, I'm going to say in this box office angle, I'm going to go one which I think you could technically categorize in the romance realm. It's got romance elements to it. Well, I think it also touches upon some of the male demographic, too, that could be interested in seeing this. We're talking about Julia Roberts coming off of Height of Her Powers with Pretty Woman, following up with Sleeping with the Enemy. Very fun film. I've routinely gone back and rewatched it. There's definitely a Sleeping with the Enemy fan group out there where it's a fun one to go back and watch. It's you got, your thriller-esque aspects to it, some more action set pieces where they're, he's coming back and he's fighting the ex-boyfriend and stuff like that, and then she has to very smart, maybe a very drastic plan for how she tries to escape, but very smart in the length she goes to. So it's fun all around. It's just a fun movie to go back and watch.
Yeah. It's the epitome of romance. I mean,
there's technically two mini romance montages in it. So,
right. Okay. All right.
Was it?
Yeah. Let me just for the uninformed here. Let me just go ahead and read the tagline for Sleeping with the Enemy here. A young woman fakes her own death in an attempt to escape her nightmarish marriage, but discovers it's impossible to elude her controlling husband. No, it's so romantic.
If you put it like that, but I mean, you got just classic songs, right? Go watch the Right Around Sue scene from Sleeping with the Enemy and tell me you're not swooning over that.
Okay.
So for that, right. I think I categorize.
It's like, I mean, I guess I'm gonna go allow it because, I would say 90% of the movies on Lifetime involve some sort of abusive, nightmarish
doesn't always have to be
husband. Sometimes there's light in the tunnel. Sometimes there's a boyfriend that doesn't get murdered by the ex-husband at some point. But
that is one. If it was a date night, I'd be like, I would go see Sleeping with the Enemy. And I think you're going to have a lot of people.
Solid, okay.
Like I said, you have Julia Roberts coming off of Pretty Woman, where that's probably right. a must watch for a lot of people. That's why okay. it's number 8 in the box office. When do you see a romance film crack the top 10 like that? Come on. Maybe it's not romance, okay, but
I'm not sure
that, technically
I'm not sure that we did. I'm not sure that we did in 1991 either, but
technicality.
I'm gonna because the field is a little thin, I'm gonna go ahead and say we will allow
I couldn't come up with a case for regarding Henry, but I like Sleeping with the Enemy so much more. So that's what I'm going with. I'll lose some style solid. Points by having a big stretch for the category, but make it up elsewhere.
Oh man. Okay. Well,
run around Sue.
You know, they can't all be winners. It's late in the draft.
Hey, I'm surprised you're this far out on Sleeping with the Enemy.
Maybe I need to, you can rewatch Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and I'll give Sleeping with the Enemy a chance too. So we'll, that's right. We'll do some post-cast reporting on this one later on. So. All right, so back to me to close out this round and do my final pick. I've got the horror category and the comedy category, two of my favorite categories for sure in this entire listing of categories. I'm surprised, that I waited this long to jump on these, but the comedy category was real deep. Lots of good choices. At least personally, anyway, for me, anyway, there was like, I could have gone, well, you've already got your comedy pick in there, so I can go ahead and name drop all I want. I thought about maybe, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
That's a classic.
I'm sure you were looking at The Naked Gun 2.5, one of those top 10 box office movies. That's, solid choice there. I thought maybe you were going to go that way instead of City Slickers, but, Sizzler's good was still solid too. So, I'm gonna. There's a lot of comedy. Let me get the horror out of the way. Let's do the horror. Those some decent horror movies. Again, Silence of the Lambs probably the best option. You're gonna go there. You had the Addams Family, which could technically be considered a horror movie, maybe possibly by some smaller children, maybe. Freddy. There was a Freddy movie. Freddy's Dead came out in 1991. I can't think exactly what the plot was of that one. So if I can't like specifically pick out the plot of that, it probably wasn't that amazing of a Freddy movie. It wasn't probably like one of the ones that you had to remember.
Three are really the only ones I go back to with any worth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, little later on when you had like A New Nightmare, I kind of enjoyed A New Nightmare when it was like, a little bit later in the Freddy run, or like Freddy versus Jason, maybe those are some solid ones too. It gets a little crossover action. you had Cape Fear in 1991. I'm surprised nobody picked up Cape Fear. But it's more suspense or thriller for me. If it's horror, it's got to go all the way horror. And for me, when I saw the list of horror movies from 1991, one of them stood out for me personally. I don't know. I'm going to have to rewatch this one too, because I don't think I've watched it since I was a little kid. So it probably wasn't even that scary. Like now that I watch it now, but like as a kid, I remember being terrified of the movie, The People Under the Stairs, in 1991. Yeah. So I'm going to lock that one in for my horror choice. Again, maybe I'll go back and rewatch it. It'll be like the corniest shit ever. And I'll be like, wow, how was I ever, I guess I was 7. So maybe I guess probably was scary for a 7-year-old, who knows, but maybe it holds up. But it's a solid movie there. They have this creepy family, and these people break in the house, and they have all these weird like incest mutated creature people under the stairs. I don't really know what you call them.
I will say that's one I'd be open to go back and rewatching, because you have a pretty iconic horror name dropping with that, right? You got Craven behind the helm there, and
right
kind of in between iconic franchises. You got Nightmare, it has a run with a few kind of one-off releases, and then he starts to get into Scream territory. So out of those one-off releases, definitely one that people were more aware of. So I'd be interested to go back and rewatch that. I'm surprised you haven't
gone
Cape Fear. I think anytime a Marty film is out there, it's in consideration, but slightly outside
but horror. I just, when it comes to horror, I got to stick to real horror, like the genre of horror, you know, because Cape Fear, like I said, you could argue that it's horror, but more suspense, more thriller, maybe even drama, maybe just with the whole stalker vibe to it.
You know? Adam's Family.
You know, the Addams Family, the original Addams Family with the little...
Addams Family's great. I watch that every year.
You know, little Christopher Lloyd as Fester. Uncle Fester. I mean, solid underrated performance.
Out great of, casting for that there. But original run there.
It was, yeah. Christina Ricci, I mean, come on. Tell me you didn't have a crush on Christina Ricci. Even in like the dark, like Wednesday Addams, pigtails.
Especially... Casper timeline. That's definitely crushing hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Right in the wheelhouse there. So solid choice. So yeah, that closes out my horror. I've got my comedy left. Again, look at the list of comedies in 1991. You know, a lot of good choices. You know, it was tough for me to narrow it down to just one. You had some name drops. Like I said, What About Bob with Bill Murray. One of the higher rated Bill Murray movies. You had Ninja Turtles 2. Nobody put out Ninja Turtles 2. I mean, come on now. Tough crowd here. Hot Shots came out in 1991. Again, the parody movie was real hot in the early 90s. Father of the Bride came out in 1991. Classic Steve Martin. The Last Boy Scout. You could have no one made it a run at that one. That could be maybe comedy. That's as well.
Action for me, but it definitely it could go both ways. I think it has kind of joke plugs into it.
So I'm gonna lock down my Homer pick. Last one for comedy here. Again, Keanu Reeves, can't go wrong. I'm gonna go with Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
I was gonna pick that for sci-fi. What are you doing picking for comedy?
Come on. I mean, you had Station, like those weird creatures. You had the Grim Reaper. You had the evil robot, Bill and Ted's, and then the Home Depot robots that came in there at the end.
Yeah.
There's so many elements to this movie.
Okay. I'm definitely an OG guy when it comes to Bill and Ted, but for what the sci-fi realm is and what the sci-fi landscape is that year, I was kind of banking on that one. So I'll give you props because you played the man a little bit and took a shot at me, but by doing so I think you you took the legs out from under you, because you just said What About Bob? You're passing over that for Bill and Ted, the sequel.
Yeah,
Father of the Bride,
sequels which... not usually very great, but if in my opinion, I mean, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey was better than the original, I think, in my opinion. Hot take.
That is a hot take.
Yeah.
I started to talk about this earlier when I was making my pick, but I pulled back on it. So luckily that didn't influence you. But Father of the Bride was the number 9 in the box office. And that's another one. Oh. We always watched that growing up. I think Martin Short, that dynamic, Martin, with him and Franz is just comedy gold. I enjoyed both that and the sequel, but I think that was a personal favorite that I was considering. But for me, it was between City Slickers and What About Bob for that spot. So that not showing up in your roster makes me feel very good, despite how weak sci-fi is from here on out.
Yeah, I know Bill Murray's one of those ones where like you just kind of you want to pick a Bill Murray movie that's going to improve your odds of numbers for sure.
It's a weird movie. It's not your traditional comedy because it's just like weird tones that they play with. But I think it's any Bill Murray movie, I feel like, ages pretty well. And as the lore of Murray has continued to grow, I think people have gravitated to that even more and more lately.
Yeah, I mean, I could have even gone even deeper cut there for this one. I mean, because 91 was also the year that Nothing But Trouble came out. We know how much I love Nothing But Trouble. Personally speaking, I'd put it on my marquee, but, you know, I can't imagine it would, you know, really draw a huge crowd. It'd be one of those, like, Saturday afternoons. It'd be, like, 10 people in the whole theater. And the theater's like, why are we running this movie? Why are we still playing this? Like, there's nobody here.
You're Nothing But Trouble guy. Makes zero sense.
You know, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, John Candy, Demi Moore.
We've wasted enough real estate on this cast talking about Nothing But Trouble.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Okay. So now I got to figure out what to do here because your roster's set and you have sci-fi left and it gets pretty barren. You got Rocketeer, which is one that you know, you're going to recognize the title. I don't really remember anything about that.
I don't either. He had a rocket on his back and he had a helmet. He's kind of like Iron Man, maybe.
Yeah. So you're basically Iron Man. You know, we got Billy Campbell and Connolly in it, but I don't really remember anything else beside that. I was probably going to slide in Bill and Ted's in there. Despite I'm an OG guy, I think it's got the best name recognition and that franchise as a whole is kind of a fan favorite, right? So, yes, you got that. Highlander 2, The Quickening could kind of fall into that.
Quickening. What a
title. But
The Quickening. Is Quickening a word? Did they make that up for this movie?
When I look at the Highlander franchise, my point of view is that there can only be one. That's the original.
Right. How can you make four or five movies and there can only be one?
I could make a case for Suburban Commando here. I think I could. That might be just Zach that I'm bringing in for my audience.
Hulk Hogan made a lot of really awful movies in the 90s, and Suburban Commando was one of them. So
I'm gonna go. Usually, I don't like leaning just the sequel route. I just think it, unless it's a really iconic franchise, you start to lose some gravitas with throwing that up there when you're looking at a specific year. I'd rather go with something just more one-off that's more unique. But given the field here, I'm going to go Star Trek, The Undiscovered Country.
Okay.
The Star Trek movie side of the franchise is very interesting. It's a few classic ones out there. Obviously, Search for Spock, Wrath of Khan. There's some ones that fans gravitate to, but a lot more misses for all the releases they had. But Undiscovered Country, you know, you got Kirk at more of that retiree stage coming back into the action. Right. You know, it's slightly more well-received than the others. So I think I have things I can play with here and kind of queuing it up with just what that franchise is, trying to get those fans, probably enough of a pool I can bring into where it's not going to be a dud. So I'll lock down Star Trek here. I'm not super excited about it, I'll be honest, but you know, you gotta do what you gotta do. And I like my strength of roster with the rest of my picks here, where I'm not as worried about that.
Okay. I mean, so this is like Star Trek six, you know, again, it's one of those franchises where like, yeah, outside of like a few name drop ones, the Spock and Khan movies, I mean, the plots kind of all melt together. Is this Undiscovered Country? Is this the one where they go looking for the whales in space? Like, is this like, it's like the space whales or something? Like,
they
hear this weird noise and they follow
it.
And it's like,
out when turns you go see it at my theater. I wasn't prepared to talk through the plot of The Undiscovered Country.
I'm gonna, you know,
Search for Spock.
Oh, sorry, I was incorrect. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, is the one with the whales. Yeah.
When they start going into the real world or like our Earth, that's where it gets a little bit weird. The one where they cross over with him and Picard was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, I'm surprised they haven't done. I mean, in the new Star Trek, they had, you know, Zachary Quinto interacting with like real Spock. That was kind of cool, but I'm surprised they didn't get more captains in there, you know, to get some next generations, you know, get the Picard in there, get the,
Surprised he never showed up.
Yeah,
he'd be all over it.
Yeah. So maybe like, there's like a time portal or something. And then Captain Kirk looks like what he looks like when in 50 years from now, when he's done with all the Comic-Cons. That's right. Yeah.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of the round here. We'll do final run through of our rosters and then call outs for any other picks you were kind of eyeing out there for that year, just general call outs. But for Studio Bull, Comedy, we have City Slickers. Drama, Thelma and Louise. Action, Point Break. Clearly romance, you got to lock down Sleeping with the Enemy. Just loses romance. Sci-fi, Star Trek, The Undiscovered Country. Horror, Silence of the Lambs. Family, Beauty and the Beast. Stacked.
Okay. Good. That's a good. That's a good little. Good little thing there. I mean,
fans in this day.
Does it hold up to the marquee over at Cafe Des and the theater over here? I don't know. Let's see. You got my comedy spot, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, drama with My Girl, action, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, romance, Frankie and Johnny, locking down the superstars here: Al Pacino, Michelle Pfeiffer. Sci-fi, arguably the best movie you could probably get: Terminator 2, Judgment Day. Horror, The People Under the Stairs, which may or may not be scary now. And family, we got Hook. I mean, look at the star power on that marquee. I mean, look at the list. You got Keanu, you've got Macaulay Culkin, you got Kevin Costner, Al Pacino, Arnold Schwarzenegger, People Under the Stairs. I don't know if anyone famous is in People Under the Stairs. I think that was one of those movies that's like people were in it and never was in anything ever again.
You think the Keanu crowds go into Bogus Journey over Point Break?
No. I think that if it's a choice of which Keanu movie to see, you probably got that one locked down. I will give you that one for sure.
I'll be honest. I think.
I mean, look at the category to category. I mean, we got some good lineups here. I mean, Family, Hook, or Beauty and the Beast. That's going to go either way, I think.
I think Hook's become a fan favorite despite what those damn critics said mean things about it. But Robin Hood and Judgment Day are going to be big, like, blockbuster films for you. So you locking out both those had me worried. But
yeah,
if I go down City Slickers, Thelma and Louise, Point Break, Silence of the Lambs, Beauty and the Beast, that's pretty much top to bottom. Like, those are big iconic films that people still talk to, or, you know, they resonate with people even today. So I got some good depth here. I think honestly, if you had Cape Fear for horror and What About Bob at comedy, you would have ran away with this.
Yeah, that's, I mean, People under the Stairs for horror choice, probably a little weak. Looking at the cast list here, Ving Rhames was in this. Sean Whalen, which if you don't know who he is, he was he's most well known for his weird characters in, like, Twister, Men in Black, and Employee of the Month. He's just a weird looking dude. He's got some interesting characters here. You know, very very much a character actor for sure. Can't say there's a whole lot of star power for People in the Stairs. It might not even be scary because, you know, again, I was 7 when I saw it. Don't think I've seen it again since, but had to put it up there.
It was interesting. You got a few top tier ones, and there's more fan favorite ones that I had, but, like, it was harder to fit them into categories because obviously, like, this time growing up, like, there's going to be a lot of family ones that stick out. Like, you know, I always was a big fan of Five Old Goes West. Growing up, right? Oh, yeah. That's the one that definitely stuck out to me as I'm going down. The Doors, I think, is an interesting one to go back to. Really interesting Kilmer performance.
Yep.
Is it really shocked? What About Bob didn't show up, because I thought that was going to be kind of a staple. I would have loved the Godfather of Bride in there. I do enjoy that movie, Addams Family.
You got JFK. That was in there, Boys in the Hood.
Considering for drama, I think that one lines up where I was back and forth between that and Thelma and Louise. I thought Thelma and Louise made me a little bit more well-rounded. I think JFK puts you in that Academy run pretty well. You got your kind of templated book, but I feel like Thelma and Louise has a little bit better staying power. So I went that direction.
I mean, you also had Backdraft in 1991 too, Russell, which we didn't really mention.
Yeah. So some fun ones, I think.
Fried Green Tomatoes. I know the name, but I've never seen. I mean, I feel like that's got to be like romance that's like Kathy Bates, I think.
I remember is I'm pretty sure Chris O'Donnell dies in like the first 5 minutes of that by getting hit by a train, and that's what scarred me as a kid. That was out. I was like, hey, that's Robin. Like, what is going right? on here?
How dare you run him over?
That was definitely a big film. I remember people talking about that a lot. So IMDb has it as, I can't see it here.
Could have probably gone as drama, in the romance category, maybe.
As its only tag.
Drama.
I don't remember it enough to make a case for romance. That would have been an interesting one, but I'm completely fine with sleeping in with the enemy in that spot.
All right. Well, solid choice there.
Yeah. So, like I said, a few top-tier ones, but like I said, fan favorites, but I think some of the outlier categories drop off pretty quickly. I'm shocked that we had to, it felt so thin after Judgment Day for sci-fi. Yeah, maybe that started a trend where the rest of the 90s people are really leaning into that genre because they see more potential with it. But yeah, very interesting that it thins up pretty quick.
You know, I mean, I honestly think that, you know, 1990, 1991, again, same thing. You know, they're both kind of still transitioning a little away from the 80s style. I think this is the last year where we're going to see a lot of that. I think if I'm looking forward ahead at, you know, the next couple casts that we're going to be doing, you know, 1992, 1993, we got some stacked years coming up here. I mean, we're going to have our hands full with these drafts. I mean, 1992. I mean, look at some of the gems. I knew you went to Macaulay Culkin right away. It had to go there. But I mean, I know we already mentioned Aladdin was in 1992. You know, Batman Returns. I know you're a big fan of that guy. You know, Wayne's World, The League of Their Own, Patriot Games, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. Tons of category bombs here. I mean, just absolute big hitters for some of these categories. So. I mean, it's gonna be an all out shootout here for this next year. So
yeah, that's gonna be fun. I already got a few of my picks locked down here.
It's gonna be a big year. It's gonna be a big year. And then, like, and forget about 1993. I'm not even sure how that's gonna go. That's gonna be wild.
That has some stacked players.
Yeah,
solid choices right there. Looking at this, of like. Could arguably go.
I mean, right off the rip. If you just go down the top 10 box office, I mean, I have a feeling like you know, at least 8 or 9 of those top 10 are going to be on one of our teams. It's going to be nuts.
Yeah, so we're going to keep going with these. We got them dropping on the movie drafts feed. We got them dropping on the Party Like It's 90s feed. If you like more 90s content, definitely subscribe on that channel. If you like these movie draft formats, we do a lot more focusing in on specific movie characters with some of those themes that we're playing with. So subscribe on both sides. Why not? More content to listen to. So
hey, there you go.
Always fun bringing you on and kicking your ass on these drafts. And we'll see you in the next year.
That's right. 1992. Here we come. Yeah,
see ya.
Welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast.
I'm Bill.
And I'm Jason. And this is the podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. So whether you're a brain, a jock, a valley girl, or a Jedi, we've got some 80s classics for you.
Do these movies stand the test of time? Are we discovering something new? Is there an 80s movie we're finally watching for the first time?
Join us each week as we dive into the cinematic nostalgia that inspired and influenced a generation. From the hits to the cult classics, we'll discuss our earliest memories, favorite scenes, fun facts, and our not-so-favorite movie moments, too.
It's the All 80s Movies Podcast, now available on all major streaming platforms. Please subscribe and happy listening.